Cipher Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on a, another comfortable day, a little bit warmer than the last few days, and we're looking for another day or so of this before things cool off a little bit and make it more pleasant as we head toward the weekend, but we hope everybody's doing well. Bill, Dan, and Drew, the regular crew here in the studio, and we will check in with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, here in just a little while. Andy had a speaking engagement in a class today, So he will let us know when he's done and ready to come on and spend some time with us today.
Are we shooting for the bottom of the hour or
yeah,
so?
Yeah, well, I texted him a little while ago and said just text and let us know. I don't know. Let's see. It's a Tuesday. If he had a 3:30, those classes are – remember Tuesday, Thursday classes are an hour and 15 minutes usually, so – he may not be done to 4:45.
I was there at the viewing window earlier today, and I bumped into our friend Andy. Didn't want to interrupt because he was chatting with John Cohen, and I thought, yeah, you know what? Maybe right now, like my pleasantries for Andy can wait while he chats with.
Yeah, probably, and probably setting up, an interview with John.
Yeah, when he's
as quite a few folks are doing after yesterday's news.
When he's talking to the head honcho, yeah, and John Cohen's been, you know, part. I think in general, like philosophy inside the Auburn athletic department has been in the news after the reveal of the Baylor game moving to Atlanta yesterday,
we didn't talk that much about it yesterday. We did a little, and Brian Matthews was, you know, of the opinion that Auburn's just out in front here, and we'll see a lot of other schools doing that, and we may. The opinion, and almost the unanimous opinion, of everyone that I have spoken to, is it's not so much that a game has been moved to Atlanta. It's just one that is so close and was already being planned on as a home game for the upcoming season has been moved to Atlanta.
Oh, there are probably some winners in this, right? Fans who maybe live closer to the Atlanta area and,
that,
you know,
want to. May not normally, yeah, that aren't season ticket holders.
Yeah, I suppose people who have never been to Mercedes-Benz before, because Auburn hasn't played there since, what, the Washington game, I believe, was the last time
Auburn was
in that building. So, I mean, you're talking about 5, 6, 7 years since Auburn's been, actually eight since Auburn's been in that stadium. But I still. Yeah, I mean, there are some winners in this Auburn-Baylor thing. Feels like there are a lot of people getting the short end of the stick as well. But like we said yesterday, that's from where we're sitting, which isn't with intimate knowledge of the budget there with regards to NIL and with regards to the athletic department and with things like that. You know, so I would think, it's the reviews have been pretty negative, though, I would say, as far as the reaction to it from.
Well, you can understand locally, yeah, because here's where we are. We're here in Auburn. So, I mean, sure, the reactions I would think locally would be that way. I mean, from season ticket holders. Although, I did see Jason Caldwell, who we'll have on tomorrow, and Justin Hokanson of On 3, Auburn Sports On 3, both are reporting that season ticket holders may – be able to attend that ball game. And this is interesting. Now I'm trying to figure exactly how it's going to work. That it will be included on the season ticket for certain season ticket holders. I mean, all right, there are 20,000 tickets that are being allotted to Auburn as we understand it now, and they're normally 60,000 or a few more season tickets that are available to be sold. So what that would mean is it could be treated, I would think, like a bowl game allotment, something like that. Priority would then play a big part. But as I've had a couple of people tell me, they don't feel like they're going to have priority enough to get tickets, but they're sure that that's not going to affect the TUF and the cost. And now Jason and Justin both were told that the season ticket price would be lower than this year's season ticket price, but I haven't seen anything about the TUF. So, I mean, look, it's going to cost regardless, and it's going to be inconvenient for the local people, and it's going to be not the same because you won't know what seats you're getting, things like that, if you're a season ticket holder. But maybe you'll be able to get tickets to Atlanta if you're a season ticket holder.
And I don't want to spend too much time on it because it's the opener next year, and this is Georgia,
right.
This is not just Georgia Week. It's not just Georgia Week, though. It's also, you know, it feels like one of Hugh Freeze's bigger games as Auburn head coach.
I think right now it may be his biggest.
Yeah, it feels a little bit like the Barbarians are at the gate right now. Not necessarily, and like we said yesterday, right? Like it's not necessarily, oh, well, you have to win, or on Sunday Auburn needs a new coach. I don't think that's a fair.
No, I don't either.
I don't think that's a fair assessment of where Auburn is right now. If things continued in the wrong direction offensively, and you weren't really talking about a very competitive second half, and it was like a comfortable Georgia win, I think there would be a pretty loud conversation on Sunday about the direction of the program and certainly the worrisome trend of three subpar performances offensively in three SEC games. Like, I think that would be, you know, with Hugh Freeze being the responsible, like, I think that would be on the table. But that's, you know, that's sort of the dark side of what could happen Saturday. Auburn could also turn the corner, you know, phrase Hugh Freeze used Monday. You know, Auburn could put things together offensively, and the rest of the schedule, as folks said when you looked at Auburn's schedule in the preseason, there's a stretch where Auburn, and especially Auburn with momentum, could be favored in several SEC games in a row. And a win here, you know, could start something really important for Hugh Freeze. Not only would it reverse the momentum of the last two games, which feels vital right now, right, Bill? Like reversing, especially offensively.
Yes.
The momentum of going from Oklahoma. I mean, if you want to include Baylor, right? You could say going from. But it's a different kind of defense you're facing, but going from what you saw against Baylor to what you saw against Oklahoma to what you saw against Texas A&M, mm-hmm. reversing that trend is vitally important. If you do it and you beat Georgia, you're looking at opportunity in the second half of the season.
Oh, well, I mean, as Hugh Freeze said yesterday, everything that that people had discussed and talked about as possibilities, you want to be in the discussion in November. Well, if you want to be in the discussion in November, you got to win in October now. I mean, Auburn can't have more slip-ups if they want to be in the discussion, and it starts this Saturday. A win over Georgia would definitely get Auburn back into postseason discussion. It would get Auburn, I think, back into the top 25. It would put away a lot of the angst from the last few weeks.
It would be Hugh Freeze's second win against a ranked opponent as Auburn head coach. He beat Texas A&M last year in overtime. He is 1-10 in 11 games against teams ranked in the top 25 at Auburn. That includes two losses to Georgia, that really competitive game in year one, shockingly competitive after Auburn had a couple of underwhelming offensive performances. Scenario feels kind of similar, doesn't it? Like Auburn didn't show you much in Hugh Freeze's first year offensively against Cal and Texas A&M on the road, came home and really scared Georgia, right? Led deep into that game.
Well, like, they led early in the second half and were tied with halfway through the fourth quarter.
And that was a Georgia team that felt significantly better from a talent standpoint than the 2023 Auburn Tigers did. Last year's game, I think, surprised people. I mean, Auburn was driving. There's the puzzling fourth down play, remember, where Peyton Thorne keeps instead of handing to Jarquez early in the fourth quarter, and there's a turnover on downs. But Auburn's driving to keep the Auburn-Georgia game close last year in the fourth quarter. And that's, I think that was a bit of a surprise because Georgia felt still some distance better than Auburn last season. So Hugh Freeze has done, now he's reversed momentum suddenly when it's time for his team to play a big game. That's happened. He hasn't won.
Well, it's happened multiple times in his career.
Yes, and at Auburn, the most significant example so far has been A&M, right? Coming off of Vanderbilt last year, offense felt directionless. You play Texas A&M and you're connecting early, you're seemingly doing whatever you want offensively. Best offensive game, if you want to argue the best offensive game Hugh Freeze has had at Auburn, right, considering the opponent and the stakes and everything, like coming off of the loss to Vanderbilt, you have the best game you've seen from the Hugh Freeze offense at Auburn so far. So they're, that's on the table. Feels like he's really got to pull that rabbit out of his hat this weekend against Georgia. And I don't know if, having gone to practice today, I don't know if it's coming with major personnel changes on offense.
Oh, I don't think we'll see major changes as far as personnel is concerned.
Yeah, or at least that doesn't seem to be the plan initially. It seems like, clearly they want to get the best out of Jackson before going to somebody else. Too Tall Miller, did get quite a few.
Yeah, and you said yesterday that you'll probably see more of him.
And you know what? So the last couple of games, you've seen him almost exclusively at guard, going in for either Jeremiah or Dylan. Beat writers today noticed that he was playing a lot of right tackle. So it seems like maybe they want to work him in instead of Mason and see what they have there, if they want to give Mason a break or want to give Too Tall a look at right tackle. That could be on the table. Jeremiah Cobb seemed to consistently get first team reps. Not though, Damari was still very involved. I think the plan all along has been a committee, but it felt like when it was time for the first guy to go, it was Jeremiah more often than not. Singleton was Malcolm was yellow non-contact. Singleton was they're being careful with him too.
Right. He was getting treatment. Right?
Yeah. And so was Darrell. Good to see Darrell jogging around.
Yeah. How about that?
Not in pads. It was
street
not
street clothes.
Yeah, street clothes, but there and recovering and seemingly on the right track. Horatio's in a scooter. Horatio's got the with the foot injury, but he's there too. Trying to think what else offensively would be. Oh, Bryce Kane. You saw more of him. I think that might have had to do with Eric and
Singleton and Malcolm.
Eric and Malcolm.
Right. Not being out there.
Beautiful deep shot Jackson to Cam in a ones on ones drill. I mean, Jackson went for all the concern because Auburn didn't take very many shots downfield of Jackson's dropbacks against A&M. Very few of them
arm.
No, but very few of those passes. I mean, Auburn drops back 40 plus times. You go 1 for 6 on downfield passes against A&M. I think some people are concerned. Jackson put one exactly where it needed to be today. So maybe Auburn's plan is to stretch the field a little bit more, or try to do that. Although he was also talking about quick game and running the ball and saying all those things in practice today. So at the press conference yesterday. We'll see what Auburn does as far as what's different. It's a lot of the same conversations, a lot of the same questions we were asking between Oklahoma and A&M. They've had a bye week to further recalibrate. We'll see what they try to do against Georgia.
Yeah, and like I said, I don't know that you'll see a lot of different faces. I mean, there may be some tweaks there, The thing that everyone is interested in is, you know, will you see a difference in the plays? You know, it's hard to tell if it's play calling or what, but I mean, will they be able to get the ball out a little bit quicker? Will they be able to run the ball, and will there be more of an effort to run the ball regardless? So I mean,
what kind of results do you get if you do that? Because I don't think it's necessarily guaranteed that Auburn's got to do is commit to running the football, and they're going to be able to just go up and down the field against Georgia. It's not like that. I think it's or maybe it is, right? Maybe we'll find out that's the case. But I think it's there's still a lot of mystery in even if they try a different approach or tinker with the current approach. What kind of results are you going to get there, right? Like it's easy to talk about the different things they could try, but you don't know if any of it's going to work against Georgia, right? And I think that gets back to, I mean, for guys like the veterans on the team that have never beaten Georgia and your new arrivals at tackle, like it's just a gigantic game for the Auburn offensive line.
That's a gigantic game for Auburn, period. Georgia is trying to match their longest win streak in the history of the series. They've won 8 straight over Auburn now, and they won 9 straight back in the late 40s up into the early 50s. So, this is something. And Auburn trying to stop that streak. I mean, Georgia's won 17 of the last 20. I mean, this is as dominant. Georgia right now is as dominant over Auburn as anybody has ever been, yep, including Alabama. You know, back in the 70s when Alabama won 9 straight.
And it's a streak that started with a win in the SEC championship game.
That's right.
After Auburn, in a game in a game that felt like it had some similarities. You'd seen more from the Auburn offense in 17, mm-hmm, leading up to Auburn, Georgia,
no question.
But the stakes felt kind of similar, didn't they? Like, Gus Malzahn had a lot riding on, and it would have been loss number 3. Auburn had lost 2 games to that point in the season. Like, Gus Malzahn had a lot riding on that 2017.
Well, yeah, I mean, Auburn was number 2 in the BCS rankings going into the SEC championship game. They were in, and then they got knocked out.
But the first meeting, the last time Auburn beat Georgia.
Yes, you're right. Well, Auburn had 2 losses going in and beat Georgia and Alabama at the end.
And that Georgia game.
Oh, yes.
And Gus Malzahn.
Yeah, there was questions about, Gus's future at Auburn. And then after beating both Georgia and Alabama, he gets a new contract.
And running the football quite effectively against Georgia. So, I mean, I think it's
never as concerned about Gus running the football as there is. Running the football.
Yeah, I mean we'll see what they do. You want to take a break and then we'll get to
let's do that. We'll get to Pat. Pat, hang on. You're up when we come back. You can get in line behind him on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
We're right back with more here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive.
Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew at the controls again. We're going to check in with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, at some point here this afternoon. But right now, we've got the phone lines open, and let's head to them. And Pat is up first. Hey, Pat.
Hey, bud.
Hey, guys. I got a couple of thoughts here. Okay, so just on the Georgia game, I know we're saying, and this is just, I mean, honestly, this could be like the worst thing or it could be the best thing technically. You know, Auburn's got to run it. We got to run it. If Auburn doesn't run it, we're going to be PO'd. I mean, it's like we're going to run.
I don't care if they run it. They need to win it is what they need to do Saturday.
Well, no, I understand. But what I'm saying, if you're Kirby, I mean, you're going to stack the box and you're going to stay in the box. And we're going to run and get 1 yard. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what's going to happen. I mean, you can almost see it. It's almost like we've kind of boxed ourselves into where we have to run. But then now he's just going to stack the box for sure. So it's like – it's almost like we need to not run if we really honestly want to have a better chance.
But I think maybe that was the thought against A&M. I mean, you know, because we heard run, and then they didn't.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, I'm just saying that I wouldn't want to be the coach right now, and that's where my second point is about this change in the game. You know, and obviously as a business owner, it's crushing, but I'm not worried about my money. I'm worried about like the ramifications for everything. It was a holiday weekend, so I'm just trying to figure out, is that going to make Auburn a ghost town now? Because instead of it being like people coming and having a 4-day holiday,
it's going to be 4 days out of town. Yeah.
4 days out of town. And it's not probably going to be in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's going to make people probably go to the lake or go to, you know.
Yeah. It's the last vacation. last weekend of summer. Absolutely.
I mean, so I don't know that couldn't have been a worst case scenario in terms of timing. In terms of the day, if it wasn't a holiday weekend, it would be different, I think. I think that was a perfect weekend for everything to start the year off. Everybody's excited. They want to go to the first game. All the students are excited. It's a 4-day holiday. I mean, it's just, I don't know if it could have been a worst-case scenario. It's going to go from being a humongous weekend to a ghost town. I feel like that's what I'm almost thinking. But
I would add, Pat, I would add to that it's a year where you only have 4 SEC home games.
Yeah.
Right? That we have the 9 SEC games, this would be a little bit easier to swallow if Auburn was playing 5 SEC home games for the first time in this 9-game schedule. But next year is one of the years where, I mean, yes, you do have Florida and LSU coming to Auburn, but I mean, it's just 6 home games overall, just 4 SEC games. The Baylor game really made that schedule, I think, a lot more attractive to the consumer.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I'm hearing a lot of people, you know, of course, everybody says it, you know, and they don't always do it. But, you know, it's like, well, I already was kind of trying to figure out whether I wanted to renew my tickets. But now it's like the tickets you're almost dumb to even buy them because you can scalp them for better, you know. I mean, you clearly would save a lot of money by scalping on the 2 good games and just don't even worry about the other games. To me, the problem, I feel like, is it puts more pressure on this game now because I think they came out before the game on purpose because I think that they didn't – if you lost the game and then they came out and said it, then I think you guaranteed just the whole meltdown would completely go down like a black hole. I feel like they kind of wanted to get it out of the way, so that way, you know, everybody's already pissed off and it'll be over with. And then if we lose,
yeah, it's sure not going to make it better, though, if you lose the game.
That's right.
You expect us because, like I was saying a while ago, we haven't heard anything from the athletic department. Matter of fact, got a request in to see if we can get John Cohen to come on with us. But, I'm understanding that it's going to sort of be part of the season ticket that some people will get an opportunity to order some tickets to that ball game. Other people, I guess season ticket holders, will be offered a 6-game season ticket, but you're still going to be paying the same TUF. So, I mean, it's very difficult to really understand that. And here's the other thing I wonder about, Pat. All right, yes, well, there's no question a huge impact to the local economy, but I'm wondering, and this is something that John Cohen would know, is I'm wondering about the impact it's going to have on the athletic department's revenue. This is 1/7 of the majority. I mean, the majority of your income, your revenue for the year, comes from football. You know, and you're taking away 1/7 of the games that you're going to have at home. I mean, you know, easy math.
Basketball season tickets are a revenue generator.
They are, yeah. But
you're right.
You figure the Baylor ticket's going to probably be in the $100 range, and Auburn would sell normally 70,000 tickets, saying, you know, 15,000 to 20,000 for students. 70,000 tickets at full price is around $7 million just in ticket sales, not including the concession and the parking and everything else that goes in there. That is a huge chunk out of the athletic department. And I guess they're going to get something in addition to the NIL, but I don't know that it would be anything near as what they would get for having that home game.
Exactly. But you also have to think, I mean, it's, it's not just that. I mean, even like if since it was a holiday, you would have had people would have probably stayed in the hotel for Sunday too. But I look at it from a different point of view. It's like if we lose this game, you know, I really just have a hard time believing we're not going to be 6-6. I just have a hard time believing it. I mean, theoretically possible, but you know, and now you're going to make Hugh Freeze go on the road or to Atlanta, which, you know, I almost think because it's a holiday weekend, you probably aren't going to get a lot of people, as many people as you think to go. And so, and then they're probably going to be $500 a ticket, you know, are the people going to really pay that up there? So I guess I'm feeling like our chances of winning that game has just gone down. And now we're going on the road to LSU, and I mean, not LSU, but Georgia, Alabama.
The impact on the season potentially is right there, too. I mean, you are taking a home game and moving it to a neutral site game. Who knows what Baylor looks like when next season starts, right. but that could matter, too. Appreciate the phone call. I want to circle back to one thing Pat said before we get to Andy, because it's I think he's probably right in that if Auburn tries to go to a run-heavy approach and Georgia is anticipating it, it could be.
Oh, that probably won't be terribly successful.
Yeah, it's about sprinkling, and it's
you got to be able to. Yeah, but there what I said,
that would be an overcorrection.
You need to be
right?
able to run effectively, but that doesn't mean just run blindly at a 10-man line or something.
Bill, you remember the horrifying DMV videos they used to show you driver's ed class? Overcorrecting on the highway,
yeah.
Right?
Like you go. Although I will say this, and now it's completely different. I do have some very fond memories of a long time ago when Georgia ran a 6-man front and would have 9 guys up there on the line of scrimmage. And my goodness, I can remember James Brooks and Joe Cribbs and guys, you know, popping past that. And hey, then there's nobody back there.
And
so.
one would think, you know, Jeremiah
you
Cobb,
at the right time.
Yeah, Cobb or Alston could be a big play threat. But no, it's like the criticism of a basketball player. Oh, he needs to pass it more and shoot it less. And it's like, well, now you get a guy who's that might not work either. Like it's finding that balance.
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break, and we're going to check in with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, on the other side. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the controls, and we're joined now by our good friend, the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. Andy, how was class today?
It was good, guys. I filled in for Greg Olson as he's calling baseball.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Are they playing right now? Are they playing in the Tigers-Mariners game?
Yeah, that game started at 3 o'clock.
I believe that they are in a weather delay. And they're hoping to get going in the next couple of hours.
Yeah, that's right. I thought it had started a little while ago, but no, apparently, it's still in a delay.
He's doing ESPN radio.
Right.
For that, as a matter of fact. So he asked me to fill in today. So it was fun. Fun to do that. So I enjoyed it.
Oh, that's cool. Well, it's great to have you with us here on the Tuesday Drive as usual. And this is a big, big week, Andy, with the Georgia Bulldogs coming in town.
Well, for a number of reasons, Bill.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's Auburn, Georgia, and, you know, that means the oldest rivalry in the Deep South. Auburn hasn't beaten Georgia since 2017. I was listening to Brian on the show with you yesterday, and he was kind of giving the numbers, the recent trend against Georgia, and it's not very good for Auburn.
Nah, Georgia's trying to match their longest ever win streak in the series at 9.
They are. So there's a lot on the line just from that perspective. I think more importantly, there's a lot on the line for Auburn as it comes off 2 very tough road losses.
Mm-hmm.
Where Auburn had the opportunity to win both of those games on the road at Oklahoma and Texas A&M. As frustrating as it was, especially the A&M game offensively for Auburn. But, there's a great deal on the line with the number 9 team or the number 10 team, whichever poll you adhere to, coming into town for a Saturday night. I think the weather is going to be fantastic, and I think the atmosphere will match the weather for Auburn, Georgia, Saturday night at Jordan-Hare.
Andy, it was the last 2 weeks, we talked a little bit about the A&M game with you last week going into Auburn's weekend away. But, you know, it feels like Hugh Freeze, you know, especially talking to the media on Monday, you know, he's still figuring out ways to get the absolute most out of Jackson Arnold. He still has confidence in his quarterback, but figuring out how to get the best game possible out of Jackson feels like it's, you know, part of the puzzle that they're trying to solve, and they've been trying to solve the last couple of weeks.
And exactly what that is at this moment, guys, remains to be seen, I think, for this ball club on Saturday. You're facing, I mean, these are the two of the best teams in the Southeastern Conference against the run. Georgia allows 82.2 yards per game, which is number four in the SEC. Auburn's defense, after A&M was able to get some yards against Auburn on the ground 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago, Auburn's still holding opponents to 88 yards per game rushing. Mm-hmm. So these are two of the best rushing defenses in the Southeastern Conference that will be gearing up for Saturday. And Auburn's defense will be tested from Chauncey Bowens, who has back-to-back 100-yard games, including a career-high 120 yards against Alabama a couple weeks ago, and Nate Frazier. And, oh, by the way, Gunnar Stockton, who leads Georgia with 5 touchdown runs on the season. And I think Georgia's rush defense will be tested by Auburn, which we know has the ability to run the football effectively with Demari Alston and Jeremiah Cobb and Jackson Arnold, who has also rushed for 5 touchdowns this season. So I don't know if there's going to be a lot of surprises in this game, and I won't be surprised if this isn't a slugfest. I will be surprised if this is a high-scoring game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
On Saturday. I don't think this is going to be a high-scoring game. I was asked this morning, and it was an interesting question, that if Auburn beats Georgia this week, but, you know, does not look pretty in doing so, does that matter to Auburn fans? And I said no.
Absolutely. I mean, you're 4-2 with a win.
Yes.
I mean, and you're there where you want. Of course, you want to be better than that. But I mean, at 4-2, you're in the conversation.
There are seasons where style points can matter a lot. You know, back in the old system, when they only picked 2 teams for the national championship, I think margin of victory played a great deal. You know, in deciding how folks looked. There are some sports at Auburn where style points matter, right? We could talk to Coach Graba, right? You know, there's but no, Saturday night, Auburn can't be in the business of style points. It's win however you can. You know, I think that an offensive, I think what's alluring, Andy, is that there have been moments where you've seen the big play potential from the Auburn pass game, Cam Coleman and Eric Singleton and everyone else that they've got out there. And there have been moments where you've seen Auburn's run game overpower the opponent. And the fact that all of that has been displayed at different points this year, granted inconsistently, but the thought that, you know, if you can put all that together, the result could be good enough to beat, especially at home, just about anybody in the country.
Well, you take a look at what Auburn did from a running perspective against Baylor. In spite of the sack numbers at Oklahoma, and in spite of the penalties at Oklahoma, you still had the chance. You still had a chance late with a drive. And by the way, Auburn had a sustaining touchdown drive earlier,
right,
in that ball game, mm-hmm. And you got the opportunity to do so again and win it. And while you had 2 chances to do that a week later at A&M, the offense just never was untracked. And when you come out of that ball game with a 0 for whatever it was on third down,
yeah, 12 or 13,
you're in a lot of trouble at that point. So we have seen this team. We have seen this Auburn offense put those numbers together in games that matter, in games that are Southeastern Conference games. And you've got to find a way to do that this week against a really good Georgia team. I mean, listen, a really good Georgia team, that's what we always say about Georgia, certainly.
Yeah.
under Kirby Smart, who's 109-20 in his 10 seasons as the head coach with the Bulldogs.
Well, it all starts, I mean, it starts with the first play, first down on each possession, and that's something Auburn has not been successful the last couple of ball games on first down. It's led them to second and long and third and ridiculously long. It seems like the average is almost right at third and 10 over the last two ball games. And Hugh Freeze is exactly right. Nobody's going to win when they're faced with third and long over and over again.
Well, this team hasn't shown that it can overcome third down and long yet. Last year's team did not overcome third down and long. Now, how Auburn goes about first and second down remains to be seen at this point. I've got to think that the run game is more involved for Auburn from an offensive standpoint this week than it was at Texas A&M. I believe that will be the case Saturday against Georgia. Will this be a run-only team? No, I don't think so, but I think it relies more on the run this Saturday than it did 2 weeks ago at Texas A&M.
Well, the offensive line, which has had problems, you would expect that to improve because the noise level is not going to be anywhere near as loud when you're on offense at home. And the other thing I thought was really interesting, the word that came out right there at the end of Coach Freeze's press conference yesterday about Xavier Chaplin with a hearing issue, which, you know, you wondered about that on the road. Hopefully that's not a problem. I mean, hopefully you don't have to worry about a silent count or anything like that. But I think it's really interesting that they've discovered that. And I don't know that just routine hearing tests are going to always find something like that.
And I don't know exactly what that meant, to be honest. From a medical standpoint, I just don't know. I think we were all kind of a little caught off guard when that statement was made yesterday at the press conference. So exactly what that means, I'm not certain at this point. How much more do we see of Too Tall Miller this week, whether it be at tackle, whether it be at guard in this ballgame? My guess is if there is a struggle up front for Auburn, we see more of number 72 on the field and perhaps earlier in the ballgame than we've seen him in the past. This is an enormous ballgame, guys. That's not earth-shattering to say, but considering all that has happened, you're back at home. It's the night game at Jordan-Hare Stadium, which has turned into a thing now for the Tigers. And Auburn has played so very well at home against teams that are much higher ranked in games where Auburn is the big underdog.
Right.
I'm not saying that's necessarily the case, but there is something to Jordan-Hare Stadium, and of late there is something to Jordan-Hare Stadium at night for opponents.
And I was surprised.
The weather's going to be terrific, so get ready.
Yeah,
buckle up for Saturday night.
I was surprised to read that this is, and I hadn't thought about it, but this is Auburn's first night game against Georgia at Jordan-Hare since 2012.
Yikes.
Yeah, how about that?
Well, it was the CBS 2:30 game for so many.
And it was later in the season many times, so it would be dark in the second half.
Right, the 2013 catch, you know, happens under the lights, you know, at Jordan-Hare because that was a 2:30 game in November, and by the time, you know, what, 6 o'clock or so rolls around, it's dark out there. But that's, you know, it's going to be – yeah, that's I think, a new aspect of the SEC and the ESPN deal is that you're going to see more of these marquee matchups played in that 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock window, which adds a new wrinkle, although – you know, I think that you get a fan base's best shot any point from 2:30 on. You know, I think night games are really special, but you know, folks will be, and for this one, I think folks have been ready to go if you wanted to play it at 8 a.m.
Thank goodness it's not an early game though.
Well, it's going to be a great atmosphere. I mean, it's going to be a great football Saturday. And we'll get it for two straight weeks.
That's right.
With Missouri coming in a week and a half as well for another night game at Jordan-Hare. So get ready. be ready when you get to the ballpark on Saturday.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. Andy, wanted to get quick thoughts from you on the news yesterday about the season opener next year opening in Atlanta instead of here at Jordan-Hare.
Well, it is an opportunity for Auburn to make some money as far as the NIL is concerned. And it's an opportunity to make some significant money in the NIL coffers for that ball game at Baylor. I mean, we're talking, I've heard upwards of $4 million and perhaps even much more than that for the NIL coffers. And that's not just for football. That's for men's and women's basketball and baseball and softball. So that helps Auburn athletically across the board. I do understand the disappointment from the fans, and I do understand the disappointment from the local community in this game not being played. It's not a football weekend at Jordan-Hare Stadium. I do understand that. But I think this is just too much of an opportunity. If I'm reading the tea leaves right from everybody, I think this is just too much of an opportunity to put some significant money in the NIL coffers for Auburn for this. I do understand the disappointment, though, for folks. I do.
Oh, yeah. No question about it. Let's see, Andy, the SEC releasing the basketball schedule, and boy, be ready for some late nights. There aren't a whole lot of early games.
There's a lot of 8 o'clock, and there's even one
9 o'clock. Yeah.
A 9 o'clock game in the middle of the week.
Tuesday night, 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's a late one for Auburn, but, get our first look at Auburn basketball next week, guys, when Auburn plays that exhibition game against Oklahoma State at Boutwell Auditorium in Birmingham. Our plans right now are to do that game digitally on the Auburn Tigers app.
Okay.
Next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow up in Birmingham, and get an opportunity. Sat down with Stephen Pearl last week. On an interview that's going to be going out, may already be out on War Eagle Plus. It's going to be the Talking Tigers podcast next week. This week it's Bruce Pearl.
Mm-hmm.
The sit down that I was able to do with Bruce at that point. And next week we talk with the new head coach, and just made the comment, Stephen, and he agreed wholeheartedly that I'm not sure Auburn's had more important exhibition games than Oklahoma State next week, and then later Memphis
right.
in Atlanta. Just to see his ball club. Just to see 10 new faces on this ball club and get an opportunity to play some very, very good competition in a game that does not count, but a game that you get everything else from that at this point. So the first of which is Oklahoma State next Wednesday, and we'll have that broadcast digitally on the Auburn Tigers app. So looking forward to being in Birmingham. I've never been to Boutwell, so this will be my first time
in
that historic venue, and an opportunity to work that game with Brad and Randall Dickey and to see the Auburn Tigers for the first time under Stephen Pearl.
No question about it. Looking forward to that. Andy, what else? You mentioned Talking Tigers coming up, so fill us in on everything going on there with the Auburn Sports Network.
As mentioned, the conversation with Bruce Pearl is this week's Talking Tigers podcast. It was done one day after the announcement and one day before Stephen was named the head coach. Well, no, one day before his introductory press conference.
Right.
He had already been named the head coach at that point. That's this week. Next week, my sit down with Stephen Pearl, just talking about this team and the transition for Stephen from associate head coach and defensive coordinator now to head coach, and how does he handle that? How does he handle his staff? And this very new, but I think very talented Auburn team moving forward. In 2 weeks, Rachel Corbelli, Auburn associate head volleyball coach, who comes from a volleyball family, mom and dad, both coaches. Mom was an Olympian on the 84 U.S. team. Father was a coach on that team. At one point, they were head coaches in California, coaching against each other. And then settled in College Station, Texas, where Rachel grew up. Her brother is an assistant coach with the Vanderbilt team that comes to Auburn this week. So,
wow,
very interesting conversation with Rachel moving forward. Excuse me, we're working on the podcast that start in November, but that's all I can say at this point. Working on those at this point. Our coverage of Auburn Tiger football begins at 3:30 on Saturday, and really looking forward. Chris Malvo, Auburn co-head softball coach, will be our guest picker this week on the picks segment. We are working on the rest of our schedule at this point. I do not have it. Hold on. I do have it right in front of me. Stephen Pearl will be our guest on that show as well. We're working on the rest of it, including some huge, huge names.
Yeah, I've got a feeling that there are going to be some names that people will be very excited to hear about.
Very exciting stuff. Exactly. We're up against it, Andy. Great stuff.
Guys, take care. I appreciate your time. Have a great day. War Eagle.
Voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us. Yes, we need to get to our final break of hour number one. We appreciate him spending some time with us. Tuesday Drive. Appreciate Andy Burcham, voice of the Tigers, joining us there in the second half of the hour. Coming up in the second hour, Jake Crane joins us at around 5:30. Until then, phone lines are open. Love for you to join in. 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Tuesday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the controls. Our thanks to Andy Burcham, voice of the Tigers, joining us in hour number one. Right now, we've got phone lines open. Well, we don't have any phone lines open. We have a full bank of calls on the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390. Want to jump right to them?
Absolutely. We got a couple of looking forward to reaching out and hearing what folks have to say.
Absolutely. And we'll get things started with Sammy. Hey, Sammy.
Bill, how are you guys?
Doing fine, man. Hey, it's been a while.
Yeah, it has. It has. Getting kids married off and all those fun expenses.
Yeah, yeah. you're right. It is not sons, daughters, what?
Both.
Oh, one wow. Okay. Both. Yeah, well, we had two sons, and it still was a little pricier than I thought.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm sitting here trying to figure out. So Auburn has been somewhat relevant since 2017, and we still lost four games. And I was talking to my son-in-law, and we were talking about Auburn, and he goes, you know, y'all are starting to go down the path that Nebraska's gone down as far as being relevant.
Ooh, yeah, Auburn fans are hoping that it's just no worse than Tennessee.
Yeah, and I go, yeah, I guess, you know, you start adding up the years, and then you look at Nebraska, they haven't been relevant, 25 to 20, 30 years? And I started thinking about it, and I go, God, that can't happen. Our recruiting area is better. Our support, money, the town of Auburn, the campus, everything is so much. It's just better than Lincoln, Nebraska.
Well, the recruiting area definitely. I mean, there's no question.
Yeah.
Nebraska. You know, Nebraska had that unbelievable walk-on program that they had, it seemed like, for anybody that was in the state, and then they were able to go recruit from out. But they had to bring in players from so much farther away.
Yeah. Yeah, I still think about Tommy Frazier being from Bradenton, Florida.
Yeah.
That just that always made me chuckle. This team, I remember I was watching, we just don't know how to win.
No, you're right.
It feels like all of our players are standing around looking at each other and waiting for somebody to make a play. And it just doesn't happen. I think we'll play hard against Georgia. I think we'll lose by 5 points. You know, we'll make some costly errors. We'll have a turnover. We'll have a couple holding calls that kill drives, drop touchdown passes. But just, you know, I was watching the Missouri game last year, and I remember we dropped a long touchdown pass right in the end zone, maybe in the fourth quarter. I remember looking at my wife going, this game's over. I said the players look dejected. They feel like, well, here we go again. And we just have got to – the players have got to start making plays.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right there. And that's a huge thing, that they need just something to go right, to get them over the hump, somebody to make a play. They've had opportunities. They really have had opportunities last year and this year as well.
And I don't want to rely too heavily on what we've seen from previous teams, because and let's be fair, the last time Auburn played a game like this at Jordan-Hare, they won. The last time Auburn played a game against a ranked opponent at Jordan-Hare Stadium was A&M last year. So I mean the one now Hugh Freeze had, you know, he's lost 10 of his 11 against ranked teams as Auburn head coach, but he has. You know, he has shown an ability to pick himself up off the mat after really scary knockdowns and get Auburn back in the fight against some good teams. You know, and did get Auburn over the hump in the sense that he did win that one against A&M. But yeah, after what you've seen the last couple of games, it would represent a pretty major turnaround to put everything together against Georgia and win the game.
Completely. I'll leave you all alone, guys. Great show. Good talking to you.
Appreciate the call. Great hearing from you, Sammy.
Yeah, great stuff.
Did you see the stat on the Sark?
What is the stat on Sark?
He's in top 10 games. I mean, this didn't have anything to do with Florida, the loss the other day, but somebody posted that Steve Sarkisian is 2-9 in games versus top 10 teams.
Wow.
At Texas, and 5-19 overall in his career.
Right, and generally people don't have good records against the top 10. But no, I mean, Sark's had opportunities, and in a place like Texas, you feel like he's got equal talent in a lot of those games.
Oh yeah, at least 334-321-1390. Was it Jeremy up next? Hey, Jeremy.
Hey guys, What needs to happen for us to beat Georgia this week, other than just score more points? Like, how do we get there?
I think Auburn. I think Auburn needs to get a big turnover or something. Something really early on to I mean, the crowd's going to be excited, but I think Auburn needs something really big and positive early on. I just feel like that. It's been tough. You know, it's been tough starting well for Auburn lately.
I remember the conversations that we were having 2 years ago when we were going through this. You know, it was what did you need? You needed turnovers from Georgia, penalties from Georgia. That's been the one thing that has kept us in these last two games. Is the fact that the other teams, penalty-wise, have been just as bad as us.
Just about, yeah, right.
I don't think you're going to get that from Georgia. I looked it up today. They only average, like, 4 penalties a ball game.
No, I don't expect Georgia to make an awful lot of mental mistakes.
Now, I do find myself, and all the talk this week, and understandably, when we talk about this game, has been about Auburn's offense. I think coming off of that A&M game, that's understandable. I am curious as to how Georgia's going to be able to attack this Auburn defense, especially after what you've seen the last couple of weeks. Like, are they going to commit to the run? Are they going to want to throw with Gunner and test the Auburn secondary? How much success? Gunner Stockton hasn't played a ton of road games in his college football career. I mean, he did beat Tennessee in Knoxville. It's not his first time, but he doesn't have a ton of experience in these situations himself. But to answer your question, Jeremy, you know, I think the word I would get back to is variety. Right? I think of the Auburn offense, it's going to need the full arsenal of weapons.
Creativity.
Right?
Hey, yeah, getting to what Sammy said, Auburn's got to have a couple of guys just make big plays. I mean, when there's an opportunity, they can't miss. I mean, they can't have an overthrow or a drop or something like that. If there's an opportunity, they got to cash in.
I agree. Like I said, I still think that like I had a conversation today, if Auburn played their best and Georgia played their best, what's the score? And I told him 24-17 Georgia.
Yeah, it's close. Yeah. It's closer than it would have been a couple of years ago if that had that happened, both teams playing their best.
Yeah, I just like I said, I really do think we need mistakes from Georgia almost as much as we need perfect football from us. And I think some tempo would help.
Yeah, I do too. Not necessarily all the time, but yeah, like Dan was saying, a variety. You know, keep them a little off balance so they don't know. It appeared to me that Alabama's tempo definitely affected Georgia a couple of weeks ago.
Well, Kirby relies a lot on, especially defensively, on seeing the formation, seeing the motion, seeing the person, like the matchup of all of that. He has got that all mapped out in his head before he gets there. And if you can keep them from setting that up, you've got a chance. But if you start getting in a checkers match with Kirby Smart over alignments and formations and all of this kind of stuff, like that's not going to go well for us.
No, I think you're onto something, Jeremy. I think finding maximizing what you've got and finding a way to avoid the crippling mistakes that have been out there in, I think, too many of these games that we talk about. Appreciate the phone call, bud. Great stuff.
334-321-1390, and Brett is up next. Hey, Brett.
Hey, guys.
There he is.
Dan, for a few minutes last night, I thought maybe we should stop Dave Roberts from getting back on the plane.
Just go to Sasaki.
Oh,
that's all it took.
I mean, how about the wheel play? I mean, for all the, and I think understandably, I think people think it's going to be the arms and it's going to be the bats that win it for the Dodgers if that's what happens. It was the glove. It was a fundamental defensive play by Muncy and Mookie on the left side of the infield to keep that game from getting really scary.
It was also I didn't think it was the wisest decision.
Not only that, but Freddie Freeman play at first in the game.
Yep.
Dan, that was a lot tougher.
Oh, you're not kidding. Yeah. That was a really you're right. Tommy Edman, you talk about short arming, thinking the game's over, don't make a bad throw. Yeah.
I had to go to the bathroom as soon as I was about to die. But yeah, I'd be curious to know, did Muncy make that play on his own, or could he actually hear the catcher telling him to go to third? Because that was a heck of a play.
Yeah, it was.
Didn't they try it first, and then it was like a false start, right? They sort of tipped their hand a little bit, and then they ran it again. I mean, I think that it was I think Mookie and Muncy definitely were in contact with each other. Maybe it came from the catcher. Maybe it came from the dugout. But they, I mean, I think they knew they were doing it.
But you had to know Castellanos was going.
Yeah.
Because I mean, it wasn't a force. I mean, you know, he just took off on his own. Hey, he was amazingly lucky that he was safe at second base in the first place.
That was
just pure luck. Woo. That when he slid in, the tag was just under his glove.
Well, Dan, the Dodgers might still do it in spite of Roberts.
Yeah, I like being able to go to Yamamoto at home in this situation. I told you, you know, take one in Philly.
Who's gonna start? Nola.
It's going to be Nola. Yeah, for the Phillies in a must win game for them. But no, I mean, it was really impressive stuff on the road against the team that I thought was maybe the team to beat going into the postseason in Philadelphia, and the Dodgers have taken care of business so far.
Brewers look pretty strong.
Yeah, I was going to say, meanwhile, the Brew Crew just continues to win. Nobody, you know, seems to get that excited about them, but they're pretty good.
Brewers are the ones I'm worried about. Anyway, y'all have a great evening.
All right, Brett, appreciate the call. Did you see, all right, the NCAA has approved the single transfer portal, and it will be 15 days from January 2nd through the 16th. But there's also a change now to the rules about coaching changes. This is really interesting. There will now be, you know, there's been that 30-day transfer portal window that began once a coach was fired, resigned, or retired. Now there's going to be a 15-day portal window that begins 5 days after a new coach is hired. So players aren't going to be able to jump in the portal when a school announces that a coach is gone. You know what that means, Dan? I would think that means that is much more encouragement or enticement to make a coaching change mid-season because your players can't do anything until a new coach is hired.
Now, does that include an interim coach, or is that sort of a permanent?
It is a new head coach is hired. So yeah. I would guess if you have an interim tag, those players can't go anywhere until the new coach is hired.
Yeah, my question there, would appointing an interim coach, like, because it's not really a change if you if you make the interim, but if it's until the job is permanently filled,
yes,
That changes the calendar a little bit.
Tremendously.
Now players would still have the regular portal window available in January, but you don't have that. Yeah, you don't have the open season that you've had so far. Although you really haven't had, I think the concern at UCLA and Arkansas was...
Yeah, are players going to just stop playing so that they can go, and some maybe could even save a year of eligibility if they only played four games.
I believe, to my knowledge, nobody has bailed on the season.
I don't know that I've heard of anybody that has.
I don't believe anybody has bailed on the season and gone into the portal at either of those schools, which is, I mean, I think that has to do probably with the calendar as well. And the fact that, I mean, you could go into the portal. I don't know if portal recruiting is necessarily the top priority at a lot of places right now around college football. They might be putting it off until a little bit later in the season. So but the single portal window, the spring window, the thought that you had to re-recruit your entire roster after
you're going to go through your winter workouts and spring practice and then find out who's not going to be around.
And look, Auburn has done pretty well the last couple of years going out and getting players that decided to go test the waters after going through spring practice. McLeod a couple of years ago went through spring practice at App State and then came to Auburn. Keyron Crawford joined Auburn after spring practice last year. Did Lambert Smith join Auburn after spring practice?
Yes, he did.
Last season, some significant players that have joined the team, you know, taking advantage of the spring portal window. If you inherit a roster like Hugh Freeze inherited, it could, you know, the spring window was very useful to find some extra help. Now everything's going to be happening in January, which is probably the best thing for the sport.
They've got
some rebuilds tougher. But it's probably the best thing. It's probably the best thing for the sport.
Oh, I agree. All right, we need to get to our first break of hour number two. Paul, hold on. You'll be up when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, and let's get right back to The Drive hotline. Paul's been hanging on for a few minutes. Hey, Paul.
Hey, guys. Do you think there's any chance that Kirby actually believes that Hugh Freeze is going to run hurry up, no huddle, and then going to also run the ball? There's absolutely no way he thinks he's going to do it or prepare for it. What's your thoughts on that?
I don't know. It's hard for me to think that Kirby's going to be – completely would ignore that possibility, those possibilities. I think it'd be more likely that he might be concerned a little bit about Auburn speeding it up than just lining up and running the ball.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's so much about the, you know, taking Georgia by surprise by doing it, right? It's the thought that maybe you can still find effectiveness, you know, by mixing in a lot of different things. I don't know if you're going to ambush Georgia with anything like that, but you could still find something on offense.
I mean, my point is for the last 3 years, we've been hearing the exact same thing from you, and he never does it. So, I mean, why is this Saturday going to be any different? I hope I'm wrong, because if we run the ball, I think we'll win the game. But I don't think Hugh Freeze can do it. I don't think he'll commit to it.
He mentioned the temptation the temptation, you know, he talked about it on after the Baylor game.
Oh, yeah.
Like resisting that temptation to call more passing plays and stretch the field with Jackson and the receivers and instead lean on Jackson and those running backs to win the game. It's I'm sure for a guy who wants to, you know, I've made the comparison. It's a boxer going for the chin. He doesn't want to throw body punches. He don't want to throw jabs that help set up the defense. He just wants to throw knockouts, and that's not always, you know, where it's great when it works, right?
Yeah.
It's fantastic when it works, but you can look like you're kind of flailing if it's well defended.
Another quick question. In the Vanderbilt game against Alabama, was that not a fumble by Alabama that they called back?
Oh, the Simpson.
Similar to what they did to us on that scoop and score against Oklahoma.
Wait, is this on the Simpson fumble?
Yeah.
See, I thought at real time, I thought, oh, maybe this is a fumble. I thought the replay showed that his forearm and elbow,
yeah,
right,
like
were down before
the ball was about.
It's close to caught, but I think he had it when he was on the ground.
Yeah, I just felt like Vanderbilt got railroaded a little bit, like what we did.
I thought that one of Pavia's interceptions could have maybe been a DPI, where the Bama defensive back sort of went right through the receiver.
Yeah,
to go get the ball.
Right,
I thought there was maybe you could have called that. That was one. I think that was the one deep in. That was the one in the red zone, right? Where mm-hmm. it's pretty physical play by the defensive back who makes the pick. But no, it was. Yeah, I felt like Vanderbilt felt like they were hanging on the further that game, the deeper that game was going, and once Bama started hitting big plays, that offense. It wasn't their day.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Appreciate the call, Paul. 334-321-1390.
Big weekend coming up. I mean, we've talked a lot of Auburn, Georgia, but it's, I mean, look, this is a dangerous spot for any SEC team going to Missouri, right? Like, I just think going, the thought that they're...
Especially with Missouri coming off an open date.
Missouri coming off an open date, having not really, the fact that you
haven't been tested.
But the fact that you haven't had a game like this at Columbia yet either, like, you're going to get a hornet's nest. You're going to get their best shot as a fan base and as a home field atmosphere.
That's true. Who's the best team Missouri's played? Kansas?
I think Kansas and South Carolina would be a really interesting game on a neutral field, I suspect.
They haven't played anybody like Alabama, but
they have not.
I feel like they've had, you know, since last December to be getting ready for this Alabama game.
Yeah, and meanwhile, Alabama has not had that luxury.
No, you're not kidding.
I think with a road game against Georgia 2 weeks ago and that home game against Vanderbilt trying to get trying to avenge last year's defeat, like this is a sudden turnaround. And
Tennessee next week.
It's not the easiest road trip. Like it's not the easiest place for a – you tend not to have nearly as many fans, you know, in attendance making the trip as you do in some other SEC places. And when Missouri's packed, when Missouri's good – or when they think they're good, they've got more than enough fans to fill that place.
Mm-hmm.
Like they can make it it's going to be. I think luckily for Bama, it's the early game. You know, if you're
that is right.
If you're going on the road, you know, I think
you'd much rather play that game at 11 o'clock.
But I still think that's just a weird.
But Missouri sort of seems. Yeah. I mean, they're used to playing those games at 11 o'clock.
I think that's a really weird, dangerous spot for Alabama to find themselves in, and. Look, Missouri could thrust themselves. How about you could have after this weekend, I mean Oklahoma's there too, but you could have Ole Miss and Missouri and A&M and Oklahoma as like your SEC.
Yeah, they could have like two game leads over some of the teams that you thought were going to be there at the top.
And those are
I mean,
three
Georgia
teams.
Could have two losses after this weekend. Alabama could have two losses after this weekend. Texas already got two losses. I mean, just look around at the LSU. I don't think LSU is going to lose to South Carolina, but I mean, I just don't know what to think of LSU either.
I just wonder if the wheels are falling off at South Carolina with that schedule coming up. But I said the same thing last year, and they went 9-3. It's No, but you could have some teams that, I mean, between Ole Miss, A&M, and Oklahoma, you're talking about zero appearances in the SEC championship game ever.
They could be out. They could be out there going, "Hey, we may be facing, you know, two teams that have never been in it could be facing
each
other."
How about that? You could very well be talking about something like that. Missouri could be in the mix too. They've been there before, but you could have Missouri playing their way in too if things go right this weekend for a couple of those teams.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think of Florida and Texas A&M?
I
don't think they're going to be many points scored.
Yeah, A&M at home's a tough draw. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that's one where and what a break for A&M schedule wise, oh, right? When no you think kidding. About, I mean, getting three. Now they'll pay for it later.
Yeah, they got three straight road games.
But you've
coming
got
up after the three straight home games.
Yeah, they don't play another home game except South Carolina in conference the rest of the way. They go to Baton Rouge and Columbia and Austin. But early on, I mean, this schedule really set up for them, and I don't think going to Texas A&M is a great situation right now for a team.
What do you think of that the Red River rivalry? I mean, Texas is a slight favorite for some reason. Because of the question about Mateer? Got to be.
Are you overreacting, being just shocked by Texas's offense over these so far between Ohio State and Florida?
Well, like, I think people thought that Sark is going to have a great offense no matter what. And now you put Arch Manning in there, it's going to be even better.
Yeah,
been the worst.
There are a couple of places in the conference that made a quarterback change and thought, well, now you're going to see what this offense is all about.
Just wait. That's right.
And John Mateer's probably been the closest as far as being, as far as delivering. Actually, I take that back. Trinidad has been the closest.
Yeah, but there wasn't a plan on making a change. Yeah, Austin Simmons was
actually
the guy.
No. Ty Simpson has been Ty Simpson has probably been the best example of. Wait to see what this new guy can do. But some of the other ones, I mean, you're still waiting for Arch Manning, to show it, and time's running out for that season. For a team that was supposed to be number one. I remember Texas A&M, number one baseball team in the preseason last year.
That's right.
Things went awry. Texas had a good laugh about that because they had A&M's old baseball coach, right?
That's right.
Now could be Texas wondering what happened from a season that was supposed to be championship caliber.
Yeah, we'll talk about those games and more with Jake Crane on the other side. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the controls. And Tuesday afternoon, 5:30-ish, that means we are pleased to be joined once again by our good friend from Crane & Company. That is Jake Crane. Jake, how you doing, man?
Oh, man, I'm doing great, guys. What a college football slate coming up this weekend. It's going to be awesome. Obviously, Auburn's a part of it, but just ready for it to get here. Then next week, we get college football on Tuesday for the first time. So it's a lot of good stuff happening.
Oh, the season's been awesome so far. I think for all the pearl clutching about what the settlement and all the sort of off-field economics talk could mean, I think it's been a fantastic college football season so far as far as the overall product goes for the industry. Results could be, I think Auburn folks would have enjoyed a different result or two, which makes this game on Saturday hard to overstate, right? I don't want to sell wolf tickets, as they say in the boxing industry, right? I don't want to oversell this, but this game just feels enormous for Hugh Freeze and this Auburn season and the Auburn program in general, Jake.
Yeah, well, not just for Auburn. This is huge for Georgia too. Because I mean, if you lose this one, your margin for error is basically gone, and they've got a tough schedule the rest of the way, as do most in the SEC. But yeah, as far as the future goes of a program, this is as big as it gets.
Yep.
Because again, you know, and I'm a guy that backs Hugh Freeze getting the job. He's a great guy. I've known him for a while. I consider him a friend. But at the end of the day, you get the Auburn job. You get paid that amount of money to win games, and there's a lot of pride at this place. And this being close and almost doing stuff, I mean, it's year three, and from the people I trust that know, if Auburn doesn't win this one, there's a decent possibility this is the last big game Hugh Freeze coaches at Auburn. So I don't think it gets any bigger than this for Hugh Freeze personally, but for the health of the Auburn program and trying to resurrect this thing to what it once was, you know, you drop this one, it could be back to the drawing board.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it depends on how it is. I mean, I think if it's a 28-27 loss or something like that, it'd be difficult to say, okay, that's it, got to pull the plug now. I mean, I know nobody be happy with another close loss. Again, it ain't horseshoes, like I've written a couple of times. But
Jake, someone asked me on a radio show yesterday about that, the existential question of, like, what do you do with Freeze after this game, depending on the result? And I would say if you continue the offensive slide and it's not competitive, I think there could be very real talk of wondering where you go from here and if a change needs to be made. If you saw offensive progress in a loss, there'd be pressure the rest of the way, but I still think he'd probably coach against Missouri. You know, I mean, I still don't think that you would.
Yeah, and what I think would happen, again, if it's ugly on offense and with an extra week to prepare, that probably elevates the chances of him being let go quick. It ups those. But what I think happens is if Auburn loses this game and it's close, and you don't let him go, you've really got to have some sort of renaissance for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Like, and 'cause again, I don't think this is the total end-all be-all unless it just looks terrible and it's so bad that you almost have to do something or it's negligence. I think this would be the point of, even if it's close, well, listen, unless this gets turned around in an amazing way, which means that you still get to 8 wins, or you get to 7 and you beat Bama and then get to 8 and win a bowl game. That's kind of how I see it going. But another scenario is if Auburn doesn't play great on offense, maybe it's not awful and they lose the game, I think Hugh Freeze has got to fire either Derek Nick or somebody. Somebody's got to be fired, whether that's the OC, whether that's the offensive line coach. Somebody is going to get the axe if it doesn't go good this weekend, because you can't sit here and just keep doing the same things wrong over and over again and saying the same thing without there being repercussions at a place like Auburn.
On the other side, I mean, if Auburn gets a win, I don't care what kind of win it is, then they've got a chance.
If Auburn gets a – I don't know if there is a bigger narrative shift in all of college football that can happen this weekend as opposed to Auburn beating Georgia. Because if that were to happen, all of a sudden it's going to flip to, well, you went on the road and you barely lost.
That's right.
Two top 10 teams. It'll switch to that so quick it'll make your head spin. And then people will start saying, well, hey, you just beat Georgia. If you can beat Missouri, heck, there's a possibility you get Bama at home. You could go 10-2. People,
yeah, you could be 9-2 with Alabama coming in if you beat Missouri. That's
well,
right.
Like it'll go from Houston fire to, hey, can Auburn make the playoff?
No,
yeah.
That's
the nature of the beast.
Yeah, you're on an elevator and there is a floor marked penthouse. And there is a.
Well, there's another one where the it's snapped and you're on the way to the bottom.
Bill, you know they'll say, well, think about it. Auburn got screwed over in Oklahoma.
That's right.
They should be 5-1.
Yep.
So let's.
You know that quick.
So let's get into that a little bit, Jake, because I think that part of the reason, folks, part of the reason all that is true is because you look at the potential of the Auburn offense and what you've seen in glimpses this year, and you think if you put all of that together, if you make the puzzle pieces fit, this thing could be really dangerous. What do you think has been the focus offensively for Auburn coming off of that Texas A&M game?
Well, to be honest, if they check Xavier Chaplin's hearing, can we get an eye test on Jackson Arnold just to see? Can we get him to stand in front of that thing and tell me, you know, is it an E, a Z, a P, or a T? But no, in all seriousness, again, you're playing at home, so the cadence issues shouldn't be nearly right. What they were. The fact that you're going on a clap cadence on the road was shocking to me regardless. It's borderline insane. But I think a lot of it is getting back to the ground game, understanding that the way your offense can work the most efficient and the way Jackson Arnold can become an effective passer is if you have a run game, both by the running backs and the quarterback, to be able to line it up. A lot like we saw against Baylor.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's amazing how much better of a passer Jackson Arnold looked against Baylor, even when they were in too high, because Auburn had that threat of the run game, and it wasn't so obvious because it wasn't 3rd and 16 what was about to happen. So I think a lot of it is staying ahead of the chains, but you've got to infuse confidence. That's the thing. You know, we can sit here and say how bad it is, and you can go to a press conference and say it needs to be better, but the players still have to believe. So I think a lot of these last 2 weeks, it's not really that schematical. It is running the ball, having that identity, but being confident and saying, if I was Hugh Freeze, I would have done nothing but shown Auburn versus Georgia 2017 highlights, Auburn versus Georgia 2010 highlights, and show those guys, we beat these dudes to a pulp before. We have the guys to do it. Everybody in the team room from Georgia stand up, and you go individually and ask them what this game means to them and what they're willing to do to win this game. You've got to infuse confidence back in this team. That's why the first couple drives are so massive for Auburn offensively, because if they're able to move the ball or there's a big play and they're able to score, I think you'll see this team, it start to make a little bit more sense. It start to look a little bit more rhythmic. We can lose confidence. The fans can lose confidence, but the players can never lose confidence.
That 17 game, too, I mean, the circumstances were different because Auburn had made some progress offensively, but the schedule was suspect. I mean, you go back and look at the 2017 team before the Georgia game, there's a real question as to how many quality teams they'd beaten.
Yeah, they were to that 6-2, I guess, going into the Georgia game.
I think
they were down 7-0 too. Down 7-0 in that game and kicked three straight field goals and then kicked into overdrive and drowned them in a small puddle of water. Auburn, this Georgia team isn't what they've been, especially on the defensive side. Now, they're a problem on offense. I think this wide receiver group is nasty, but if Auburn's defense continues to play this way, and another thing I'm not seeing a lot of people talk about, Georgia's offensive line's pretty beat up. Mm. Like, there's a lot of injuries, not just guys that are out, but nagging injuries for this Georgia offensive line. So I think Auburn could create a lot of big plays because Gunner will do two things. He'll put the ball in harm's way, and he'll stay in there and take hits.
Mm-hmm.
I watched Kentucky hit him 4 or 5 times, and I thought he was going to be like Mr. Potato Head, and they're going to be picking up pieces of him all over the field. So I really think if Auburn's offense can get to 23, if you can get to 23 points, however that happens, if it's 14 from the offense, a special teams touchdown, a defensive touchdown, a safety, whatever, I think Auburn has a great chance to win the game.
I think Gunner also tests out the speed of an opposing team's front seven, right? Like he'll go out, he'll try to make plays with his legs, and that's an area where, you know, I feel like Auburn feels like, you know, their pass rush could be up for that task. And it's, I mean, just as important as a fast start for the Auburn offense, if Auburn can force a slow start from Gunner in what is just his second true road start as a college football quarterback, that could be huge as far as making this game, keeping this game interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, without a doubt. And you know, not only is it his second road start, it's his first night game road start. And again, the biggest difference, and if you haven't coached it or played it, like, it's hard to explain, that wait time from the beginning of Saturday to 6:30 is a long time. It is a long time to sit there and wait to play this game. But if Auburn is able to get a lead and put the pressure on Georgia, now all of a sudden, maybe we see the false starts on the other side. Maybe that Jordan-Hare crowd can smell blood and it turns into an absolute madhouse like we all know it can. And then you have the advantage in the second half on defense, instead of being at a disadvantage because you're just living in 1st and 15 and 3rd and 12.
Yeah, that's the dream for Auburn. There's no question about that, Jake.
Do you think that's part of the reason that road teams do well at 11 a.m.? Or that folks think that road teams have...
Oh, it's no doubt.
100%. 100%. Because it's, again, think about it. And that's why if you're an Alabama fan, you love the 11 o'clock time slot at Missouri. And it's not just because it doesn't give the fans, you know, more time to drink to be even rowdy. They're going to be rowdy, but it's very businesslike. It's, hey, mm-hmm. we fly out Thursday or Friday, whatever, however you go about it, if you're flying or driving. We get there Friday, we do our walkthrough, we go to the hotel, we have our meetings, we get up the next morning, have another walkthrough, we have our meetings, and we go kick it off. There isn't enough time for you to think about how crazy it is. There isn't enough time. I remember watching our guys when I was at South, when we went and played Tennessee, when we did our walk around the hotel before we went to the game, and it was a 2:30 game. It wasn't even a 6:30 game, just how oohing and aahing they were at the amount of people that were out there, and it just really starts to let the gravity of the game start to set in, and that can affect guys in general, but especially guys that are a little bit inexperienced, it may be worth a turnover.
So does that mean you don't like Missouri to be unbeaten when they come into Auburn next week?
Ben, I'm going to be honest with you. We do our picks tomorrow. I have not made my mind up on this game yet. I've looked at it. Every time I look at Missouri, they just look like a better version of Vandy. And I think Ahmad Hardy may be the best running back in the country.
Oh, yeah, he may
be. Auburn fans, he's going to show up next week, and they're going to run outside zone, outside zone, outside zone, boot off of it, hit the tight end in the flat off the boot off of it. That's what Eli's going to do. But I don't know. I think it is as true as a pick'em as ever. The biggest question to me is, you know, can this Alabama team continue to play disciplined like they did at Georgia, like they did against Vanderbilt, and let the other team make mistakes, as opposed to what we saw last year in their losses with Kalen DeBoer and then the Florida State game.
Jake, I'm always fascinated by those situations, and I guess Auburn saw one recently where you're going on the road and you're facing a team coming off a bye week, right? Like Georgia's in that right now, and you were not off a bye. Like you played.
Georgia's in that. Alabama's in that.
Alabama's in that. I mean, those are situations where it really feels like, you know, it's you know, condition. It's like when you talk about hurricane season, right? Like conditions are optimal for something to happen. Like conditions seem optimal for an upset. When you're talking about not just the home team, you know, not just a team being at home, but a team coming off a bye week when their opponent is not.
Well, I think a lot of it depends on how you're playing. The health situation, yeah, you got another week for guys to get healthy. Your starters don't have to go strain in a game, so they're going to be healthier. But I used to hate having bye weeks when we were playing great. Like, I don't think it's a great time for Alabama to have a bye week right now. I think it kind of works out with them. With the way that they're playing, not having that off week, Auburn is obviously different, at least offensively, to where you needed that reset. You needed guys to get a little bit more fresh. So a lot of it just depends on how you're playing.
You know, Vandy's on bye this week before LSU goes there next week.
That's good for them.
Matter of fact.
I think that works out for them. But I tell you, Missouri's good, man. Like, they're good.
Yeah, they are. As you said, should be another fun week. Let everybody know what's going on and coming up on Crane and Company.
Yeah, well, look, if you go to YouTube, it's Crane and Company, C-R-A-I-N and Company. We've got a full Auburn-Georgia preview. I mean, we got down in the weeds on it. You can find that. We're going to do our official predictions tomorrow on the show. It comes out at 2 p.m., we got our power rankings. We got our playoff rankings, all that stuff. So, yeah, man, come over and check it out.
Great stuff, Jake. Thanks a lot, man. Have a great week.
All right, y'all be good.
We need to get to our final break. Our thanks to Jake for joining us, as he does every Tuesday here on The Drive. We'll get to the final break. Back to wrap things up here on The Tuesday Drive.
Jonathan here with University Ace Hardware at University.
And Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Final couple of minutes of the Tuesday Drive. Fun show today. Yeah, and a quick one with Andy Burcham in hour number one. And then Jake Crane joining us here in the second hour of the show. Hopefully you got a chance to hear all of it. If you missed any, though, check out the podcast.
Podcasts of The Drive, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Go to ESPNAU.com, use the Podcast Center, or just go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, all presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Now, let's see. Tomorrow, Dan, you're gonna head down to a function in Troy, right?
Yeah, they're doing the basketball banquet. They've asked me to appear. I assume they want me to, you know, do 15, 20 minutes of jokes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A little soft shoe, maybe Earth, Wind, and Fire cover, you know, something.
You're like Barry's opening act?
Yeah, Blood, Sweat, and Tears song or two. It's going to be a good time. Always great to see Big Bear.
Oh, yeah. Tell him hello.
And the rest of the gang there. Should be an exciting season. Troy brings back a lot from last year's WNIT runner-up. So it's, should be exciting stuff.
So Coach Don Dunn, who has said he had a great time fishing down in South Florida, will be in tomorrow. Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover should also be with us in hour number one.
Although Bill does not know what I'm about to tell you guys.
No, I don't.
Jason told me during the viewing window.
He's not.
He is going to call in from baseball for a couple of segments.
Oh, okay, cool.
He's going to be watching the they got a baseball scrimmage, I believe, going on tomorrow.
Yeah, ball's definitely been going on. They had scrimmages over the weekend as well.
So I think Jason's going to be watching some baseball, and he's going to call in from Plainsman Park.
Oh, that's good. That'll be good. So we will talk a little baseball. Obviously, we'll talk football and more with Jason tomorrow. And Coach Don Dunn will be in. Hopefully, we'll be able to talk to you, our listeners, as well. But that's going to wrap things up for the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Again, our thanks to Andy Burcham, Jake Crane, and all of our listeners and callers. That's going to do it for today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.